Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because I get to count down our favorite horror movies of 2019. It is our annual favorite horror movies episode, and as always, I'm joined for this very special episode by the wonderful managing editor of DailyDead.com and my horror BFF, Heather Wixon. Hi, Heather.
Hello, Patrick. Thanks for having me back after a year.
Has it really been a year?
Yeah. It's okay.
See,
I know you guys are way too cool over here at F This Movie to have me on.
No, so it's because of that goddamn Corpse Club. Every time we have a chance to podcast, it's for the other show. And so we end up never recording for F This Movie. But this year will be different. We will make the time to record non-horror episodes for F This Movie.
We'll see what happens, but it's should I break down the magic and explain that we're actually going to be recording two episodes this week, so we're getting like double horror BFFs all over the place. So.
Basically, and one last week. It's too much. It's too much of us.
Too much us. Too much us. Actually, we should just do this episode silent.
Okay.
And just record silence for like 90 minutes and be like, we just felt like there was too much us in this episode,
so we decided
to step back, you know. You could just play, like, random movie clips or, like, songs or whatever.
Okay, that's just radio.
Well, there you go. We'll make good radio.
Oh, nice. All right. I like it. Little Z95 action.
Right?
I was always a Z95 person, not a B96 person.
I was a B96 person.
Oh, you're a monster.
I am. No shame. It was funny because I remember when Eddie and Jovo used to like go like to different places in the mornings, and they would stop at like White Hens or whatever, and they would like do like signings or whatever. And it was my eighth grade year, and I had just moved to Villa Park, and they were over at the White Hen by my middle school. This is after I moved out of Elk Grove. And I ran over there and I had them sign my KED.
Wow.
Yes. Because that's
still
all I
have.
Had.
Do you still have the KED?
No, but I'll tell you what, I had it through high school.
Because now it would be worth about the amount of a used KED.
Yes, exactly. Put that baby on eBay and I'm living the easy life for at least 10 years.
Erica was a Z95 person, so I married wisely.
I guess so. You Z95 snobs over there, whatever.
We like to keep it in the family.
Gotcha. All right. You know, but eventually I got cool and was, of course, went over to Q101 because,
well,
come on.
We all did, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I remember the first time I heard Nirvana on B96, and it was like 2 weeks later, I think it's like when I discovered Q101, and I was like, oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
And it was all over from
there. Yeah. And then Q101 became unlistenable, so.
Oh, I know. I learned that last time I was home, and I was really heartbroken by that.
Yeah.
I think it was like the last week that they were on, or like the last month they were on or something like that. And I was like, wow, this is really depressing. But no, my man cow in the mornings.
Oh, it's a shame. Well, I guess that's enough Chicago radio talk, everyone.
Yes, enjoy that. This is what you guys tune in for. This is the gold. This is the gold.
We are going to be counting down our 10 favorite horror movies of 2019. If you are a listener to Corpse Club, which is the official podcast of DailyDead.com, last week the episode dropped with some of our favorite horror episodes. Some of our favorite horror movies. I'm guessing there's going to be some overlap. I know I'm going to talk about some of the same movies that I talked about on that show. I'm guessing you will as well.
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yes.
I have no idea how much overlap there is in our listenership, but I apologize to those of you who've already heard us prattle on about these movies. Bear with us. You'll hear us talk about, you know, six or eight other movies as well. Heather, you are the guest. You should absolutely go first with your number 10.
Oh, all right. If I have to, I guess.
You do have to.
So I kind of wanted to mix it up a little bit because obviously, you know, we did our lists on Daily Dead. We did our episode on Daily Dead. So I'm like, what else do we say about our favorite horror movies of the year? So I kind of mixed it up a little bit and dipped into my honorable mentions.
Okay.
For this episode, I figured, you know, why not, you know, flavor it up a bit. So my number 10 is going to Neil Jordan's Greta, which is a movie I don't think a lot of people really talk about enough. It was a good year for old ladies screwing with teenagers or young people, if you will. Mm-hmm. And being an old lady, I appreciate that very much so. I was really kind of torn between Greta and Ma, to be very honest, because, like, you know, Greta has Isabelle Huppert, Ma has Luke Evans's penis, which, you know, I got to really weigh my options here. So I went with Greta because it's interesting because that movie came out very early last year. And I still kind of think about it a lot because I just think it had some really good dark humor to it. And a lot of it was very predictable. But I think once you get into like the last 20 minutes, it really sort of mixes it up a bit. And I just think, you know, Huppert is really having a fun time with the role of Greta in this. She's excellent in everything that she does. But there's just something really, really fun about sort of seeing her in this kind of role and manipulating poor Chloe Grace Moretz, one of the most trusting females in modern horror, I think. But I also think what's interesting is I really like Makeham Monroe in this movie as well. Because she plays Chloe's like best friend in it, and she's very proactive. It's usually a character that sort of falls into the background in horror movies, and really in like the last third of the movie, she really kind of comes forward, which I thought was really cool to see. So yeah, I went with Greta for my number 10.
I did not see Greta. I saw Ma.
Okay.
So I've seen Luke Evans's penis.
Yes.
Greta would have been better if it featured a hoopenis.
A hoopenis. Well, I mean, you could have seen, like, Calm Fjords, I guess, maybe, or
I keep trying,
Reyes, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know that they would do much for me, but yeah, no, I think there's a lot of fun to be had in Greta. All right. I think you should give it a shot.
I will. I tried my best to catch up on as much 2019 horror as I could, and I still have a few blind spots, so.
There's so much! Yeah. There's, like, so much! Like, I'm already, pardon my French, but balls deep in 2020, and I still have, like, 8 movies that I really still want to see from last year, and I don't know when I'm going to see them now, because it's, like,
right.
It's already happening. Like,
stay caught up, right, with 2020, yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's crazy because I've already seen 2 movies in 2020 that I know will make my year-end list, and you just mentioned a third that you went to a screening for. I can't say it will make my list, but I'm very excited about it, and you said it's awesome.
It
so.
Might.
Right, it very well might. Could. So that's 3, and we're not even out of January.
Wow. So are you also talking about The Grudge?
I'm not talking about The Grudge, no.
Oh, okay. I was like, because I mean, that was right. I mean, I'm obviously going to take a stab with Underwater.
Yes, that is one of them.
Oh, I knew you were going to love Case doing that.
Yeah. No, that movie is fantastic.
Oh, it was like somebody handed me a platter of everything that I love in horror movies and was like, here you go, feast upon this. And I was like, give it to me. Give it all of it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That movie kicks all sorts of ass.
No, it's
What's
terrific.
What's the other one? I'm curious.
VFW.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That was nice.
It's not out yet, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it comes out in February. Those of you listening, it'll be out in February, and you should absolutely see it.
Oh, yeah. That movie is badass. I saw that at Fantastic Fest, so I've been holding on to it for this year. What's the point of doing a favorites list of movies that haven't come out
that
yet?
People can't see? I know.
Exactly. Like, here's this cool thing that I got to experience and you didn't, because I'm a stupid jerk.
That's why I didn't put Veronica on my list.
I haven't seen that yet either.
Oh, it will not be on anyone's list.
Oh, okay. I apparently my sarcasm meter is off tonight.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, it's a movie, I
okay.
think.
Okay. Well, that's more than I've made.
Okay, sure. Glenn Danzig has you one-upped there.
All right.
All right. My number 10 is a movie called Arctic, written and directed by Tom Bocci. Am I saying that right?
I have no idea because I haven't seen it. I okay. like that we're doing this. We're setting it up already.
Yeah, it's a Dread Central Presents title, or I guess just a Dread title, and their track record is a little spotty. Although they had a couple good movies last year, they had Harpoon, and they had The Golem, which was like probably one creature short of making it onto this list. It's a really good movie, but there's no Golem in it. It's just a little boy. And you can't have a movie called The Golem and not have a Golem in it. Like, I just, I have to call bullshit on that, but the movie's really good. Arctic is really good as well. It's about a little boy who's the son of this serial killer played by this actor named Jerry Angelo, who I was completely unfamiliar with, but he's really something. He's really, really good and scary, and he has this great voice. And then the kid kind of befriends Chase Williamson, and Chase Williamson kind of has a showdown with this serial killer. So Chase Williamson is in it. Lauren Ashley Carter is in it. Matt Mercer is in it. So it's basically indie horror, the movie. And you
like
have to
all
have
the best people.
Right. But they have to show up somewhere on this list. So it's nice that I was able to get them all in one movie and get that out of the way. But it's really a solid movie, and it flies by. It's like 75 minutes long or something. It might be streaming on Amazon Prime for those of you who want to check it out. It's, you know, more or less humorless. It's really dark and pretty mean-spirited, but really strong stuff.
Interesting. Yeah, I did not get a chance to make time for that one this year. Or Harpoon, which I'm really kicking myself in the ass about, but...
Harpoon's good.
You know.
Arctic, by the way, is currently streaming on Prime.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I know Harpoon is going to be extremely my ish, as the kids say.
They do say it.
I just have not had a chance to get to it. Damn it. It's a lot of H titles for me this year for some reason.
Interesting.
Yeah, I missed a lot of H titles. I missed Harpoon.
Mm-hmm.
I missed Haunt. I missed...
I saw Haunt.
Hagazusa?
I saw that. Yeah, wow, you missed all the H's.
I did miss all the H's this year. So I'll do an addendum to my 2019 like year once I finally get a chance to watch them.
Both of those movies are good and worth watching. Hagazusa is a little bit like, it's a movie I can respect but probably won't ever revisit.
Okay.
But Haunt was surprisingly good as well.
Interesting. Yeah, that's kind of like me with maybe a movie that might be on your list. So
okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see.
All right. What is your next movie?
All right. So my next movie, because I'm a big proponent of early release movies of the year. So my number 9 movie, I'm going to go with Adam Robitel's Escape Room.
Wow. All right. Escape Room making the list.
Yes, I know. You can laugh all you want.
You're all about that January horror.
I am.
You just wrote a whole article about it.
I basically reinvented J-horror. Now it's January horror.
I love it.
Yes. It scratched every cinematic itch that I have because I just want to be entertained. I want characters that I care about. I want something intriguing that I haven't seen before. And I know it's like, ooh, Cube. And yeah, it's similar to Cube, but this really, really focuses in on sort of this, you know, the sort of zeitgeist of what escape rooms are these days. And the fact that we're so idiotic and we're like, hey, let's go lock ourselves in some random room for 60 minutes, basically giving some guy who's sitting on the other side all the power because you can't bring your phones in. You're like completely cut off from the world. And what happens if like all of a sudden that shit is real? For me, it was so much fun. Like, I think Adam Robitel does a fantastic job in it. I love this cast, because you have Deborah Ann Woll, who's really, like, so good in this movie. I really, really loved, Tyler Labine, is also fantastic in it. And Tamler Russell, who had a really excellent, 2019 between this movie and Waves, which is obviously not a horror movie, although, right. So it's got some pretty terrible things that happen in it.
Yeah.
And I just absolutely fall in love with her character Zoe in this movie. Like, she's so smart. She's like, she reminded me a lot of myself because I'm like, I'm the kind of person, if I'm sitting in a room with strangers and like somebody's having a conversation and I know something, I won't say it because I'm too intimidated or maybe because like I'm in my own head a little bit. So I think I just kind of really zoned in on like who she is and that just kind of spoke to me. But yeah, I freaking had a blast with Escape Room. It's sort of like what Hellfest was like a few years ago for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of those movies I wasn't expecting. Yeah, I was expecting a fun time. And then it's one that I've actually revisited a few times and I just still have a lot of fun with it. And I think the upside down billiard room set is probably one of the coolest things that we got to see in a horror movie last year.
It was very cool. And you're absolutely right about the characters, because unlike, say, a Saw movie, to which comparisons could be drawn, you don't want these people to die. And in Saw, they tend to be awful people, which is the whole point, right? They're being punished or they have to atone for their sins. And most of them tend to be horrible people who, you know, would fuck each other over in an instant to survive. And Escape Room is all about them working together. And you don't want them to die. You want to see all of them succeed. It is a movie that I had very low expectations for because it was, you know, a PG-13 horror movie in January built around escape rooms. But it is surprisingly...
everything you love.
Right, exactly. But it was really surprisingly solid. If I have one nitpick, I think the last, like, 5 minutes are kind of a disaster.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think there's like, the ending, and then there's, like, that second ending, and you're like... we didn't need the second ending.
No.
No. But I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah.
Are they doing another one? I'm ready for it. Yeah. I believe it actually comes out this summer, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow. Graduating from January to the summer.
Yeah. It made a shit ton of money, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a regular John Wick situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say it made over like $100 million. And it was like, I think
did it
less
really?
Than
oh, my God.
Yeah. Dude, the movie was fun. People recognize, you know? So, yeah, it's I was really excited to see that one do as well as it did. And I think...
$155 million.
Did it really? See, I was
pretty
close.
On a budget of $9 million. Good Lord.
Yeah. Right?
That movie was very successful.
And I think, you know, and here's the thing, like, as much as the concept works as well as it does, I think Adam Robitel is a really interesting director. Ghost Dimension aside, I think he just wrote that one, if I'm not mistaken. But look at The Taking of Deborah Loken.
That's a good one.
I thought he did a really great job with Insidious Last Key, because I don't think 3 was very strong, and I hate saying that. But 3 to me just didn't really do it for me, but I think Last Key kind of brought me back into it. And now Escape Room, like, I'm pretty much on the Robitel Express now, so I'm ready to see whatever he does. But yeah, I'm really jazzed for Escape Room too.
It was supposed to come out in April, pushed back to August, pushed back to November.
Okay.
Probably for awards consideration.
Yeah. I'm ready. Next year, I'll be presenting the award for best horror to Escape Room 2.
Yeah, you will.
I'll start campaigning now.
My number 9 is a movie that is probably higher on your list, so I won't spend a ton of time talking about it, and that is Ready or Not.
Ready or Not is very much on my list.
Okay.
But this is why we are horror BFFs, because we recognize the good shit.
Well, we can wait till it comes up on your list to talk about it.
Oh, okay. We can do that. I mean, you know, we can talk about it now too.
I liked it. I will say that this movie, I think its impact was a little bit diminished for me by the marketing, because it was such a great trailer. Like, one of the best trailers of the year, but I saw it too many times, and it diminished the impact of the movie because so many of the surprises were given away in the trailer. So as I'm watching the movie, it's kind of like, yeah, I remember that. Okay, yeah, I've seen that beat. Oh, right, yeah, I remember that from the trailer. Which isn't to say that there aren't still some surprises in store. There certainly are, and I appreciate the movie for going where it does, but... I just thought it was very confidently done. I thought it was yet another movie released this year, you know, about class disparity and about how rich people suck. And Samara Weaving gives one of my favorite performances of the year. It's nice to see her be a movie star.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also, maybe it pays to be me and late to everything, because I think the only time I ever really saw the trailer was like maybe snippets on like Adult Swim or something like that. Because I think I saw it in theaters once. So it wasn't really as hammered into my head.
Yeah.
Because I'm literally late for everything. So I miss trailers often because I'm one of those jerks who walks in during the trailers. But, you know, assigned seating, that's what you get. I'm just, I live in LA. I'm on time for nothing. Nobody ever is. But yeah, no, I, for me, this movie was just like, I didn't know how much I needed a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, as amazing as Samara Weaving is in a movie, and she is, I think the rest of the cast is pretty fantastic as well. I think, you know, in terms of really great ensembles, obviously Ready or Not, Knives Out are kind of two of the best we've seen all year. But I love Adam Brody in this movie.
Yeah, he's great.
Because I wish I just had sort of that, I just don't give a crap anymore sort of attitude where I'm just like, whatever, like, I'll tell you what you need to know, because just let the world burn at this point. I don't care. But I think he's really interesting in this movie, you know, and yeah, I'm a little biased because of the OC and stuff like that. But it's just kind of cool to see him doing something really different in film. But yeah, obviously, I know there's been talk of like Knives Out as a sequel. Has this been given a sequel? Because this one also did pretty well, if I'm not mistaken.
Can they give it a sequel?
Well, I mean, maybe like she takes over like their stuff or something.
Maybe.
I mean, look.
It made almost $60 million on a budget of $6 million.
That's pretty good.
It's not escape room money, but it's pretty good. 10 times.
Can you believe it?
10 times your budget. No, I cannot believe it. It makes no sense to me.
That's amazing. I mean, look at it this way. I had a conversation recently where somebody involved with The Intruder already has an idea of how to make The Intruder 2. So anything is possible.
All right, good.
Yeah, so... You know, get ready for that.
It was cool to see the Radio Silence guys make a feature that I thought was really strong. I didn't see Devil's Due. Their segment in VHS was cool. Their segment in Southbound was very cool. So it's nice to see them expand to a feature and kind of...
Yeah, I guess I never saw Devil's... I didn't see Devil's Due either, so this would be... sort of my first experience with them as feature filmmakers, too.
Yeah, and I thought they did a really good job with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And God, that, I don't know who the production designer is off the top of my head or anything like that, but my God, like, I wish I could live in that house, because I rewatched the Blu-ray, and it's just like, there's so many little nooks and crannies going on in that movie, and I'm not talking English muffins either, but there's just, like, little designs, like, in, like, different wall, like just wall things and everything like that. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm really glad I can enjoy this at home, because like, you can really sort of take it in a little bit. Cause I think much like Knives Out, I think the first time you watch it, everything kind of zips right by you and you're enjoying it. You're on the roller coaster ride, but sometimes you just want to sort of saunter through and really soak in those details. So yeah, it's, I enjoy watching it a second time, even knowing everything that was going to happen.
Right. Yeah, in some ways, I feel like it would almost be more satisfying knowing what's coming.
Yeah, it's I mean, she's so good, and it was interesting. I also learned too. Fun fact for those of you listening out there, like the three of you that are like still tuned into this, the shoes that Samara Weaving wears, her Converse, are a very specifically dyed yellow. They're not just the yellow Converse you buy in stores. They are very specifically dyed to a very specific yellow. So there you go.
Good to know.
Thrill your friends with conversation, folks. There you go. I just served it right up for you.
Thank you for that.
Look, I deliver the goods.
You do, always. You're a top critic.
I'm something.
So we are at your number 8.
All right. So my number 8 is something I think I talked about on the Corpse Club last week.
Okay.
It's in my favorites list. I don't know that I have to dig into it too much. But my number 8 is Child's Play remake.
Ah, yes.
Yes. Talk about a big old heaping serving of surprise. I am always somebody who likes to be cautiously optimistic about pretty much anything. And I was like, all right, we're getting a new Child's Play. Let's see what happens. And then I saw the design of Chucky and I was like, oh dear God. Okay, what the hell is that? And then I saw the movie, and it all made sense. And I was like, ah, yes, okay. So this is why you don't judge a book by its cover. It's a wise adage, kids. It's sort of the same way when everybody kind of freaked out about Pennywise, like, before the first movie.
Right.
And it's like, oh, it's actually genius. Never mind. you know, I mean, I've talked about this movie a lot. this year, so I don't know how much else I have to say about it. But I really enjoyed the direction that they took it. I really think it stands alone. I hate that it has to sort of wear the Child's Play moniker because, like, you know, somebody's got to make some money, you know, at the studio. So it sucks that, you know, we have to basically call it Child's Play, because I think if they had done a regular killer doll movie and called it something else, like, you know, I still would have enjoyed it just as much. It being a Child's Play movie doesn't exactly add anything to it for me. I just think the way that they set everything up is really great. I love how brutal and darkly comedic it is at times, especially sort of the ride when she gets the automated car. And I think the ending is a lot of fun. And of course, I know you appreciate the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 stuff, because we talked about that. Heck yeah. But I just think it has some really, really good stuff. And it's just so interesting to me that this movie comes out in the midst of the original Child's Play franchise still going. Now we've had like a TV series announced that's going to be part of the original Child's Play. And I'm like, do we do a sequel to this one? Because I think there's more to explore here. And it's just like, you can't call it just Child's Play 2, because that movie, like, it's so crazy to me. Like, all of the weird little strings,
right,
you know, from this world after 30-something years. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think it has some really interesting things to say about our reliance on technology. And that I'm right to be paranoid about these things. So, like, the furthest I take things is the fact that I have an iPhone. Like, I don't need the rest of my life automated yet. I'll see when I'm, like, 80 and I'm old and I can't get out of my chair or whatever. But for now...
Then you'll be mostly cyborg.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, if I'm mostly cyborg at that point, I could probably just still get up and do that for myself. So.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, because I'm pretty much going to live forever. So, get ready, world.
This definitely falls into the better than I expected camp. Like, I had pretty low expectations and a little bit of an attitude going into it. Like, all right, fucking Child's Play remake, show me what you got.
Who do you think you are?
You're not my Chucky, you asshole. And you're right. It succeeds by being very, very different. Again, it takes the basic premise of kid gets Chucky doll. But takes it in a completely different direction. You know, I still have a little bit of a hard time swallowing, like, I think they just cast the kid a little too old to be that reliant on a doll.
I think it also sort of works. I was going to say, just really quick in response to that, I totally felt the same way the first time. But then I also realized, like, there's parts of the movies where they're sort of just making fun of it.
Sure.
As, like, kids that age would do, which I think sort of builds the animosity that grows between Buddy and Andy. So I totally get that, because the first time I saw it, I was like, why is this kid so old?
Yeah.
But, you know, also, like, can a 7-year-old be outdoing some of the things that this kid would be
doing?
Right,
which is why they made him the age that they made him, which I get. You know, there's not a movie if they cast him at 7, but... whatever, I got over it, you know, and I just went along with the movie. And there are a couple really fantastic set pieces. There's one involving Christmas lights, and another one, is it in a basement?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the basement of the apartment building.
Yeah. Just a couple of real showstoppers. And it goes big by the end. I thought it was fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm as much as I sort of like the dark brooding intellectual horror, if you will. Sometimes I just want to sit down and have fun. And it's interesting because I'm looking at my list this year, and there's definitely, I think, more fun on my list than there are sort of the hoity-toity horrors of 2019. So it's interesting. I think maybe I just was sort of tired of being intellectually stretched as much, I guess.
Right.
Or emotionally stretched. I don't know.
Hoity Toity Horrors is the name of my new podcast. It's a sister podcast. Welcome to Hoity Toity Horrors.
And you have to drink tea while you talk?
Today begins our 12-part series on Robert Eggers.
Which one, the Lighthouse or the Witch?
Doesn't matter. It's just Robert Eggers. He's the king of hoity toity horror right now. And I say that as somebody who liked both of those movies.
Or I mean, would it be like him and Ari Aster together, though?
I think Ari Aster's a little less hoity-toity.
Okay, okay.
He All might right. be hoity, but he's certainly not toity.
Certainly not toity. I'm going to use that from now on.
Please,
you're hoity,
do.
But you are not toity. Yes.
My number eight is a movie that turned out to be pretty polarizing, was talked about a lot the weekend it premiered, and then hasn't been spoken of really since. And that is The Perfection, which I think is a little bit the result of that Netflix model, which is we all talk about something when it comes out, and then because there's no physical release, there's no second life for the movie, it just kind of disappears from memory, unfortunately. And horror fans are nothing if not collectors. Had there been a Blu-ray release, I think there would have been another wave of people talking about it on Twitter and Facebook. Hey, I got my Blu-ray of The Perfection. Let me give this a shot, or let me watch this again. And having a conversation about it, but it seems to have kind of gone away. And a lot of people didn't like it at all, which I understand. It's a movie that is not afraid to be very operatic and go way over the top. I knew nothing about it sitting down to watch it, and so I was amazed at some of the directions it was willing to go. I didn't know what kind of movie I was watching because it goes in a lot of strange, unexpected places. And reminded me a lot of like Japanese or Korean revenge cinema with how dark and mean some of it is. And again, just how over the top everything is. But I really liked it.
Yeah, I saw The Perfection at Fantastic Fest 2018.
Okay.
Or 2017. Yes.
Oh my gosh, 2017?
No, 2018. Sorry, okay. I don't even know. We're in 2020. Holy crap. I'm in a time loop right now. So it was interesting because it was one of the movies, like, everyone's like, oh my God, you have to go see The Perfection. And I was like, okay, I guess so. So I kind of moved some stuff around on my schedule and went and saw it. And I'm really glad I did. I really liked that movie a lot. I had no idea what I was in for. And I love the fact that you think you're watching one movie for about 15 minutes and then all of a sudden it sort of switches things up again. And then it switches things up again, and then again. And
right.
Then you're like, by the end, you're like, oh my God, you're almost exhausted. Where you're like, holy crap, like, I don't know what this is culminating towards or anything like that. Yeah, I do think the Netflix-ness of it sort of ruined the sort of, everybody has to be like that first person to talk about it, and then there's just no ongoing discussion. Which is kind of a bummer. I was actually talking about this the other night because like something like The Night Comes for Us, which I freaking loved. Like I want to own that movie in my hand.
Yeah.
Cause one, I want to see BTS on it because that movie kicks ass. But two, you know, we're sort of lulled into this idea that if Netflix is streaming it, it's going to be there forever. And I just don't know that that's always going to be the case.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I think The Perfection wears its influences very much on its sleeve, but I don't think that's a bad thing whatsoever. In fact, one of my favorite things was after we watched it at home, I showed it to Brian, and then right afterwards, I was like, we should watch Old Boy, which he had never seen.
Oh, I remember this, yeah.
And he had no idea, like, where Old Boy went. Like, he had no idea. I was like, wait, you really don't know, like, the whole punch to Old Boy? And he's like, no. And I was like, oh, my God, we're watching this right now. Like, I had work that I had to get done. I was like, forget it. We're going to watch Old Boy. And his mind was completely blown. So that was a fun movie night for us. But, yeah, I understand why people probably wouldn't like it. But I think there's a lot of people who get reactionary to things in a very sort of grandiose way. I think we just get a lot of people who just declare everything the worst thing ever.
Right.
And I'm a little more measured when it comes to movies. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just a softie or something. But I did see people like get really pissed about this movie, not as much as other movies that came out last year. But it definitely was a little bit of a hot button movie for a while. And then there was like some people would get nasty if you talked nice about it. And it's like, I think maybe that's why ultimately some people just stopped talking about it. Because every time you did, somebody was ready to, like, jump down your throat about it.
Yeah.
Again, not as much as other movies that were released last year. But, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes I'll talk about a movie initially and I just don't like to engage with it after that because I just don't know what is going to happen.
Right.
Once you do. So, right. But it's a really great movie. Allison Williams is fantastic in that movie. I mean, everybody in that movie is great, so.
Yeah, Again, and that was one of the complaints, was that the performances were too big. But again,
like, come on.
Yeah. I get it. They're kind of in hysterics the entire movie, and it's supposed to be big. I mostly don't talk about movies online anymore. I mean, I will, like, if I write about something, or I'll talk about it here on the podcast, but I won't really go on, like, Twitter and share my thoughts about something, because, again, you're just inviting somebody to jump in and tell you why you're wrong or call you names or whatever. So even, you know, I saw Underwater and thought it was really, really terrific, but resisted the urge to tweet out, like, I really loved Underwater, because I knew somebody would come along and just be like, oh, it's an alien ripoff, you know?
I was going to say, you didn't want 17 tweets telling you it was an alien ripoff?
Exactly. So I just keep these things to myself now.
Yeah. My favorite was, though, that somebody was like, well, what if I say it's a Galaxy of Terror ripoff? And I was like, all right, well done.
Much well better. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yes, that's pretty funny. Thank you for the chuckle. Thank you for the chuckle, fellow tweeters.
Yeah. All right, you're up.
All right. So my next movie is, again, I think a movie that I talked about, I think on the Daily Dead episode we just did, talked about my favorites list. I've talked about it ad nauseum for pretty much about a year now, so I don't know how much more I have to say about it, but I went with Little Monsters.
Okay.
Which I adore. Again, I think I just was like, oh, I need feel-good horror. And there it was waiting for me. You know, I think, again, if you talk about actresses who had really fantastic 2019s, Lupita Nyong'o obviously had a pretty fantastic year playing, I guess, three roles, technically, when you look at it.
Yeah.
And I just think she's so goddamn delightful in this movie. Like, I just want to be best friends with her, and mm-hmm. I want to play a little ukulele, and I want to sing Taylor Swift, and I don't even like Taylor Swift.
No.
But it makes me want to sing Taylor Swift. You know, and Hanson songs, and just, I mean, it's just, it's an utter delight. And I had a chance to see it at Sundance last year, and it really just was sort of what I needed, because last year was kind of, it was a little rough. Because in the midst of that was when a friend of mine who is a special effects artist, Matt Rose, passed away. I had just gotten out of the Anton Yelchin documentary.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, and it's so beautiful, but boy, I was an ugly mess when I walked out of that, for good reason. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, he was a fantastic person beyond being a fantastic actor. And so just to have something like Little Monsters, which is like this little ray of sunshine at midnight, just really was everything I didn't know I needed, but I just fell in love with it. And I was so glad that Hulu got it, because I was able to stream it again in a few months after, it, you know, as soon as it came out over there. And it's sort of become my, like, go-to new horror that I recommend to people, for people who don't necessarily like, you know, solemn, straight, you know, scary, quote-unquote, horror movies. Just because I think there's a good amount of tension in it, yet, you know, the stakes feel very real, but it still has a light touch to it. And I think Abe Forsyth did a really fun job with sort of walking a really fine line of putting kids in peril, where it feels serious, and yet it's not dour.
Right. Yeah, it was, for me, it was, it's not as high on my list, as it is for you. It's not on my list, but, it was like different enough, you know, because we just are so burnt out on zombie movies, and this one found enough different to do by making it about kids, by making the whole school teacher and giving her, a real purpose and a real mission to keep all these kids safe. It made it different enough that it was, like you said, entertaining and light. You know, it's much more Zombieland than it is Dawn of the Dead. But it was fun. And usually fun can kind of be taken as like a pejorative, like when you don't know what else to say about a movie. Oh, it was really fun. But this one is, and that's kind of what it's aiming for, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I loved little tiny Darth Vader in that movie.
Very cute.
There's some really good moments in there where you're just like, oh, you just want to clutch your pearls if you had them. And be like, oh,
I always have stars. Pearls. And like you said, Lupita Nyong'o's performance alone, I think, makes it worth watching.
Yeah, and even Alexander England, who is he's Dave in it, and right. He's sort of this loser guy. And we've seen that character like a billion times over. But I think he has an interesting enough arc to make it different than, again,
yeah,
something we've experienced so many times over and over and over again. And I think that he gets sort of a well-earned arc once it kind of wraps up in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super fun. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it on Hulu. It's a good time.
Yeah, for sure.
Even if you're like me, and I'm sure he's listening right now, so I apologize, but even if you're like me and you cannot stand Josh Gad, it's okay. He's actually tolerable in this movie, and his dickheaded performance in the movie really makes sense. And
yeah, I mean, the movie knows, you know, his stuff was probably my least favorite stuff in the movie, but the movie knows how to use him and his particular brand of grating obnoxiousness.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I feel bad saying that about anybody, but boy, I don't think I've ever seen him in anything that I've actually liked him, except for this. And that was just because he wasn't the main focus. If I had been following Teddy McGiggles the whole time, I don't know if I would have had as good of a time.
All right. My number 7 is my favorite slasher movie of the year. It's a movie I talked about on that Corpse Club episode. It was a Shudder exclusive. It's an Australian movie called The Furies, which I got to watch because you had sent it to me. You said, hey, would you mind reviewing this for me? And I knew nothing about it except the title. And so it opens, and you think it's one thing, and then it very slowly becomes another thing. And as I started to realize where the movie was going, I got more and more excited because it, like Little Monsters does with the zombie genre, this kind of does with the slasher movie, where it tweaks it just enough, it gives it a different spin. It's yet another movie about class distinction and class difference, this time in Australia. But it has some of the most brutal gore in a movie this year, and it's just insanely entertaining. I thought it was really, really terrific, and it's a movie I've heard almost no one talk about.
Yeah, I'm glad I assigned it to you. I feel good because I feel like I introduced you to something that made your list, so that's good. I haven't seen it yet because I'm the worst. But it's funny because I was like, wait, I think I wrote a note about it because I have like this ongoing to-do list of just things that I jot notes and stuff down on. And I had actually typed it out when we were doing our Corpse Club episode because I was like, oh, okay, I should make sure to make some time for that. But I'm glad to hear that something like that was homework and ended up being so much fun.
Yeah, it's a good one.
All right. Yeah. I feel a little bit better now.
Good. That's all I'm here for.
So you should thank me for making you have to do work.
Thank you for that. It's great though. You know, when you are assigned a movie to review and you love it, like, cause it's so much harder when it's something disastrous and you're like, okay, now I need to find a way to talk about this. That isn't just, especially with like an indie horror movie, you don't want to just sit there and tear it down. You have to find polite ways of saying this didn't work for me. But when you are surprised by something and you really love it, it's fun to write about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I you know, and you know this, like, it's always nice when you're watching movies to get a surprise now and again where you're like, huh, like, I'm really enjoying this a lot more than I thought it'd be. Or, oh, this is something that's taking me in a completely new direction. Yeah. Like, it doesn't always happen that way. So right. When it does, it's like you have to, like, hold – it's like little – like, it's a tiny little, like, snowflake. You just have to hold on to it because it's special and it's unique.
Definitely.
So, yes.
All right. We are up to your number 6.
All right. So, you know, I think we've probably talked about this before. I am a whore, if you will, when it comes to Stephen King adaptations. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot get enough. Give me everything you can. It's bugging me that I can't watch The Outsider on HBO because I just can't do HBO. So I'm just like, oh, there's a Stephen King adaptation out there that I can't watch. But it's interesting because we got 3 big ones this past year in theaters. And if you would have told me at the beginning of last year that the one that I was the least familiar with would end up being my favorite of the 3, I would have been like, you are bananas. So my number 6 is Dr. Sleep.
Okay.
Yes, I come from somebody who's only read The Shining and only seen The Shining. I didn't read the book, so I know that there's people who've read Dr. Sleep who have issues with the movie. And I'm kind of glad I don't have that baggage because I could sort of just appreciate the way that Mike Flanagan is able to take the book of The Shining and the movie of The Shining and tie them into where they go into the future in a way that doesn't really diminish what the book or the movie versions of The Shining did. And it feels very much like a really nice companion piece to both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so impossible sounding. But I never sort of doubted Mike Flanagan because he's never really let me down as a filmmaker. But I just didn't know how it was all going to work. And, you know, maybe if, you know, if I go and read the book, I'll be like, oh, this and this, and, you know, and maybe I'll be a little more upset about it. But I really loved it. Like, I just thought, you know, I think there was some, a little bit of slow parts here and there. But overall, like, I just found the world to be really fascinating. It's kind of amazing to me, just how quickly Rebecca Ferguson's character, you know, coming in as Rose the Hat, like, has become a thing.
Yeah.
Like, almost instantaneously. I mean, she's badass in it, too, and it's Rebecca Ferguson, but, like, just how quickly, like, that just caught on. Because it's not like, she's not, like, an obviously supernatural character. Like, she's not iconic looking in the way that, like, Pennywise is.
Right.
So it's interesting to me just how quickly certain aspects of that movie really connected with genre fans. I think that's pretty rad. And I love Kylie Curran in it, who plays Abra. And I think, you know, when you have a young talent like that, and she's basically, you know, working with somebody like Rebecca and working with Ewan McGregor and, like, sort of these really big dramatic talents, like, to be able to not only hold your own, but actually end up sort of being the best parts of the movie at times, like, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I think she's really fantastic too. And I just, I really loved, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm totally blanking on his name. Seeing Carl Strachan in there as well. I mean, it really is sort of like a Mike Flanagan's greatest hits in terms of his players.
Right.
But it never feels that way. And it's so interesting to me that, like, some directors get endless shit for things like that. Rob Zombie. but Mike Flanagan does it, and everyone's like, oh, what a lovely homage to his career. Rob Zombie does it, and they're like, oh, this lazy asshole can't hire anybody but his friends. So, you know, whatever.
Right.
So for me, it's just, it's really nice to, like, it ultimately ends up being a celebration of Stanley Kubrick, Stephen King, and Mike Flanagan all rolled into one.
Yeah.
And I still think that the scene with Jacob Tremblay is one of the most horrifying things I've had to sit through in a mainstream horror movie this year.
Definitely.
Holy shit. Like, I say this as someone who doesn't have kids, but I was like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, this is going to ruin the nights of a lot of parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's two scenes in that movie that really kind of do it. When he wakes up in the toddler, and then,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, you know, I think for a movie that should not have worked as well as it does, I think Dr. Sleep does some really magnificent stuff.
I think it's an amazing movie. I think it was such a joy to see Mike Flanagan working on that scale. I mean, I saw the movie the weekend it opened. I saw it in IMAX, and just seeing some of those images on the biggest possible screen was like, holy shit. Cause most of his movies have been fairly small. You know, I still have not watched Haunting of Hill House. I feel bad about that. So I haven't seen what some people consider to be his masterpiece. But I thought, it was, like you said, this great sort of meeting point between Flanagan and King and Kubrick, and the way that he brought it all together, I thought was so satisfying. I'll have probably more to say about it in a little bit, but, I really, really, really loved it. And I appreciate that, like you said, it's willing to be horrifying. You know, there's, like, some supernatural horror and some of the stuff we come to expect from a Stephen King movie, but then there's also some stuff that feels very real world and is just, like, horrifying in a way that we can almost relate to on a visceral level. And I appreciate that even though the movie is sort of big and supernatural, that it has those moments. I'm super excited to see the longer cut too, because I feel like it's just more of a good thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yep, I totally agree. Well, it's interesting to hear that we might hear more on this.
Yeah. My number six is also a Stephen King adaptation. It is It Chapter 2, which is not I didn't like it as much as It Chapter One, which was not only my favorite horror movie of 2017, but my favorite movie period of 2017. I really, really loved It Chapter One. It Chapter Two, like the TV miniseries version, is the lesser of the two halves. It is flawed and tonally inconsistent and sometimes goes too big with some of the performances, I think, and some of the tonal stuff. But I just appreciate how good some of the set pieces are. I appreciate how great Pennywise is as a horror character. I appreciate, again, and you and I talked about this when the movie was out, that they include some of the stuff like that opening scene. There is some of that real world horror still in the movie. And it's just, we so rarely get Hollywood horror that's willing to be as fucking weird as It Chapter 2 is. And it is a weird-ass movie, sometimes to its own detriment, but I just have come to embrace all the weirdness. A lot of people, you know, complain about the Can We Still Be Friends needle drop. I think it's Can We Still Be Friends. When James Ransone is getting, yes, like, the blood
vomited.
Yeah, and I don't get it at all, but part of me is just like, fuck it, I'll go with it, you know? Like,
oh, no, isn't it Angel in the Morning?
Angel in the Morning, not Can We Still Be Friends, sorry.
Yes.
It's insane.
I don't know why out of the whole movie that's the thing that people have the most problems with.
Because, like, it makes no goddamn sense, and there's nothing before or after it to contextualize it at all.
But, like, I mean, who cares? Like...
Yeah, it's like, not worth, like, panning the movie over, but I guess it could be seen as exemplary of some of the larger inconsistencies with the movie, which I don't disagree with if people feel that way. I just happen to like it, warts and all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If we were doing top 11, I think Chapter 2 would have been in there. I can't even believe I didn't put it on my honorable mentions list. I feel like such a jerk. I really did like it a lot. I think I want to, like, revisit it again with part one. But I think it's, for me, it's like, It Chapter One is like the really safe version of this world. And that's not a bad thing, but I think it's just, it's so comforting in this, like, nostalgia driven, but in a good way. Like, I mean, because I think there's so much to these childhoods that a lot of us relate to, and these, you know, and just sort of the things that these kids are going through that sort of translates really, really well. And there's sort of a timelessness to that. And I think by Andy sort of getting weird, because he is a weird dude, I'm kind of curious to see what he's going to do with The Howling, now that that's like a thing. Did you know that?
I heard that, and I just, like... Again, I'm not trying to be like a grouch, but just make a werewolf movie. Like, why does it have to be The Howling? Just make a werewolf movie for Netflix. I'll see it. You don't have to brand it The Howling just because it's a name that horror fans recognize.
But it is a good title. It is
sure,
a good title.
Sure.
You know. We'll probably be eating these words in come 2021 when it turns out to be amazing.
And I'm fine with that. I just, I felt the same way about, you know, Child's Play. And if, honestly, the fact that they now announced that show makes me like the movie a little bit more, because I think I would have had some resentment towards the movie if it fucked up the chances for Don Mancini to continue that story, because I'm dying to know where that story is going to go.
I just don't know how that's going to work on cable, but that's like a whole different discussion.
Oh, no, I have no idea either. But the fact that it's going to exist at all, now I can be cool with the remake, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, like I think there's a lot of really good stuff in It Chapter 2. And again, when you talk about sort of, I mean, it's King. Like, it's, there's a lot of stuff that he does that's very impossible to adapt to a visual medium. Like, you can really sort of sink yourself into it when you're reading the book, but it doesn't always parlay well into a film. And of course, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, could have gone wrong with that finale. And I think it gets it pretty right. In terms of, you know, I mean, we've seen the miniseries, so we know where it can go. And then there's also other ways it could go. And I just think, like, in, he made the best out of a nearly impossible situation. And I love how they sort of, and I'm really glad, because like the second time I saw it on IMAX. So I'm really glad I sort of got that big, huge Pennywise, like, right up in my face.
Yeah.
because it is extremely impressive. I know people have issues because like certain parts of different characters weren't fleshed out as much as they should have been. I actually saw somebody complain that it was way too focused on Mike, which I'm like, for a character that kind of gets tossed away in the first movie, like maybe it's okay that we spend some time with him in the second movie.
Yeah.
Like just chill out, especially because like that's the whole, he's the glue, you know? Anyway. But no, I'm really glad you put it on. I felt like a jerk not, but I was like, well, I can't do, you know, I mean, if we could do 20, I probably would put Pet Sematary's like crazy mean ending in there just because I loved seeing everybody lose their shit over it.
This is why we're not going to 20.
This is exactly why we're not going to
20. All right, we're in the top five now.
All right.
This is where shit gets real.
It's getting serious now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my number five is, again, a movie that I've talked about a ton last year. So, again, I don't really know how much more I have to say on it. But I went with Happy Death Day to You.
Oh, nice.
I figure if I just talk about it enough in the universe, like, maybe Universal will be like, you know, Heather really likes these movies. We should just do the third one. Even though we're not going to do the third one, we really should just do the third one. But yeah, I just, you know, I love the first Happy Death Day. Mm-hmm. I was fine with where it went, you know, because the first one is, you know, this sort of fun, silly, weird, whodunit slasher. This one is, you know, very much the Back to the Future 2 of the series.
Right.
And I think they just really have fun with it. I think it gives Jessica Rothen a chance to really do some fun stuff in comedy and also in drama, in terms of the stuff, you know, with sort of reconciling her past. Which, you know, again, it sort of becomes the heart of what these films are about. And I'm still really, really bummed that we are just never going to see the final part of it. Like, I can't believe somebody out there just won't give him like $2 million just to go make some movie to wrap this up.
Does he have a third installment like that he wants to do?
Well, thanks for listening to the Corpse Club episode I did with him and Jessica Roth. But
I haven't heard it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. You've only had like almost a year. I can understand you've been busy. Sorry. But yeah, he had a plan for a third. He knew exactly where this was all going to lead up to. And it was going to wrap everything up. And that was that. It was going to be a trilogy. And it's a bummer. You know, it sucks when a director, you know, sort of sets out with this first movie. And hey, it becomes really successful. And he's like, okay, I'm going to take a little bit of risks with the second one. And, you know, and then I've got this plan to wrap it all up with the third. And then he just never gets to take it there.
Yeah.
You know, I still feel like, you know, Christopher Landon's, you know, sort of running laps waiting for that finish line. And he's just never going to get there, which is kind of a bummer. But, you know, you'd think with like, you know, and I don't say this disparagingly, but like with all the movies Blumhouse puts out and stuff, like, you really can't just put like $3 million away for Happy Death Day or 2, 3 or whatever.
Right.
It's a bit of a bummer. Like, I need closure. Damn it.
They have to use that money for Fantasy Island,
I guess.
Yikes. Yeah, these movies should not work as well as they do. Like, the first one was kind of a miracle that they pulled it off. Because, like Groundhog Day, it's like, well, this is a concept that's going to grow old very quickly, and it never does. And it's bolstered so much by Jessica Roth's performance, who, like Samara Weaving in Ready or Not, is like a movie star and carries you through a movie that, again, shouldn't work, beginning as a reprehensible character and ending as somebody you really, really like. And then you find out they're doing a sequel, and you're like, well, I don't want to go see Groundhog Day 2. Like, we're really just going to repeat the same shit again and again, again?
Like, how tedious would have that been?
Right. But the fact that they find a completely different direction to go. And I remember going to see it with Erica opening weekend and sitting in the theater and, like, almost giggling to myself as I realized, like, oh, they're turning this into, like, a science fiction comedy. Instead of a straight horror movie, and being so excited that this was going to be a completely different kind of movie. It never fully became the movie that I was hoping it was going to be. Like, it almost backs off some of the insanity to go in. And it goes in a really interesting place emotionally, like you said. And I think all that stuff really, really works. It backs off some of the zaniness to go into a more dramatic place, which is great. But I was like, I really wanted it to double down on being completely nuts, and it never quite gets there. But But again, it's one of these movies, I don't really like the expression, like, better than it has any right to be, because what right does a movie have to be good or bad? I don't know. But going into it, I was like, okay, more of this, and it subverts all your expectations. And I feel like that's true of a lot of the movies that we're talking about on both of our lists, and that is a trend I can get behind.
Yeah. You know what? Let's shake it up a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? Because I just, you know, it's one of those, again, where I'm like, if you would have told me, like, Dr. Sleep would have been the Stephen King movie I was going to love the most this year, I'd been like, you're crazy.
Right.
Like, I was primed for Pennywise.
Yeah, me too.
You know? And I was like, yeah. And I liked it. But Dr. Sleep has just really lingered with me a lot longer. So, yeah I just, I don't know. I'm all for give me some surprises. That's all I want.
Yeah. My number five was a surprise. It's a movie that came out of nowhere. I watched it because it showed up, I think, on iTunes, and I watched a trailer for it and was like, well, that looks fascinating. It's a movie that technically played festivals in 2017, but wasn't released here until 2019, and it is the debut feature from writer-director Richard Stringham. It's a movie called Close Calls, which I wrote about on my list of favorites for Daily Dead. It's about a girl played by Jordan Phipps who is home. She's grounded and she's home, like, taking care of her kind of crazy grandmother up in the attic. And just a series of bad shit happens. She's getting these prank phone calls and guys keep showing up to the house. And it's becomes kind of surreal after a time. It uses the cinematography of, like, 1970s European Italian horror, but the production design aesthetics of, like, an 80s slumber party slasher movie. So it's hitting a lot of my kind of sweet spots, and it's total exploitation because, like, Jordan Phipps is basically in her underwear the entire movie. But it's also very much about, like, again, this is a phrase that gets thrown around so much, but it's about this idea of toxic masculinity, because every guy she interacts with is, like, a different kind of scumbag. And it's just sort of about, like, what it is to navigate the world as a young woman. So I like that it's sort of about something in addition to being just this weird, semi-psychedelic, colorful, like, gorgeously photographed horror movie. And it's the movie that almost more than anything else I couldn't get out of my head all year. I've revisited it a few times already, and I'm sure I'm going to keep revisiting it.
Interesting. I'm glad you brought it, because when we did our Corpse Club episode, I was like, I was sort of hoping, because I, you know, I'd read everybody's lists and stuff, and, you know, it was great to see on different lists, like, there'd be, like, one or two titles that would pop up on everybody's list that were just sort of these unique little moments. And I was like, oh, okay. So when we were doing this, we were kind of doing, like, our honorable mentions. So I was like, I want to know more about that Close Calls movie, because I read what you wrote about it. And I literally never heard about it. Never heard about it. Like, it kind of just, it's one of those, like, as soon as I was reading, I was like, how did I miss this at festivals? I have no idea. So I'm glad that you mentioned it tonight.
Yeah, I was kind of saving it for this show, and it's become one of those, like, little personal mission movies for me. Like, I want to turn more people onto it because I think it's special. It is currently streaming on Amazon Prime if you're interested.
Okay, I am interested. And I just went over to my to-do list and wrote it next to The Furies. Ha-ha.
Which you also haven't done.
I know. I'm working on it, all right? I'm sorry. They had to release four horror movies in January this year.
I know.
Like a bunch of jerks. It's funny because, like, it just sort of reminded me of, like, a bunch of movies that, like, kind of just I saw at different festivals, and then, like, they were just kind of, like, skirt through. And, like, I heard about people talking about festivals and then just never again. Like, yeah. Bloodline. Did you see that?
I did not.
It's really fun. It's slasher Sean William Scott, right?
Stifler? Sounds right.
Yeah. And that movie really surprised me. Yeah, it's, you know, it's got some sort of lineage to Dexter, but I think it does some really different things that makes it feel not Dextery.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I realized, I'm like, shit, I should have put something like that on my list. I'm a jerk.
It's all right.
I just went with all the big normal stuff because I'm boring.
No. I like how different our lists are so far.
Yeah, they are. Well, it's about to get a little bit same, though.
Oh,
so.
God damn it.
Yeah. I mean, we just sort of talked about this one a bunch, so I don't even know how much we have left to say about it. But my number four is Ready or Not.
Oh, yeah.
Here it comes.
Nice.
Yeah. So, there's not really much else to say about it other than it's awesome.
This was one of your only 5-star movies for the year, right?
Yeah, there was only a handful of those this year. So, you know, I get a lot of shit because I like a lot of stuff, but I don't know, like, maybe my standards are low or maybe I'm just easily entertained, like some sort of movie watching chimp or something. But, you know, I didn't dole out a whole lot of 5 stars last year. So, but this got it.
My side podcast is after Hoity Toity Horror is called Movie Watching Chimps.
Can I guess on that one?
Like some kind of movie watching chimp is what you just said.
I'm pulling out all the gold tonight. I've saved it all up for you.
All right. So my number four is my favorite horror comedy of the year. It is Chelsea Stardust's Satanic Panic, which we talked about on Corpse Club. It's a horror movie with a little bit of everything. It's got practical monsters.
Just like I like my pizza. Talk about a segue.
Nice. It's got some supernatural stuff. It's got some satanic stuff. It's got a big orgy. It's got a giant killer dildo. It's got...
Little something for everybody.
Little something for everybody. And it's very, very funny. Jerry O'Connell gives the performance of the movie. He's hilarious in a scene-stealing performance. AJ Bowen, also very, very funny. But that's not to take anything away from Haley Griffith in the lead, who is one of those people that, like, I hadn't really seen in anything before. And she shows up in the movie and you're like, wow, who is that? That girl is going places. Ruby Modine from the aforementioned Happy Death Day is really great. And then, you know, all of the neighbors are played by, like, Jeff Daniel Phillips and Jordan Ladd, and we talked about this on Corpse Club. A lot of the supporting cast is just like people you like to see show up in a horror movie. It just feels like, you know, Chelsea Stardust had all this stuff she wanted to put into a movie and got the chance to put all of it into one movie and really just ran with this opportunity. And it's incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's weird because, like, I feel torn because, like, I know there's so many, like, blurring of lines now, like, in these different communities. Like, I feel weird if I put anything Fangoria-related on, like, a list or, you know what I mean? Like, I felt weird reviewing VFW out of Fantastic Fest because I feel like anybody could look at me like, well, if you write stuff for them, then obviously you're biased. Because if you know anything about me, you know I'm super biased.
I know you.
Oh, yeah.
You're easily bought, Wixen.
I am. That's exactly... my price is pretty low, too, folks. So, you know, send your emails and
at
your checks.
The Horror Chick.
Yeah.
At
and
The Horror Chick.
I'm taking all donations right now. So I always feel weird, like, doing that. So that's why, like, Satanic Panic didn't make my, like, main list. It's why the Stand Up of Spirit Creek kind of made my honorable mentions as well. It's why, like, I want to sing the praises of VFW to the high heavens if I could, but I feel weird because I'm like, somebody, I just want somebody to think I'm biased.
Sure.
But I legitimately think that those are great films. And it just so happens that they came out by somebody who happens to post some of my writing sometimes. So it's weird because I absolutely adored Satanic Panic. And as soon as I read your review, I was like, oh, this is so going to be something I'm going to love. Yeah. And I think your affection for it really rang through in that first review. And I think it, you know, obviously in your favorites as well, when you sort of did your Chelsea double feature. But yeah, I think it's just a really fun movie that just, again, you want surprises, you want to be entertained. You both times though, you sort of skipped around Rebecca Romijn.
I mentioned her this time.
Oh, okay. I mean, did you have beef? Do you have beef with her? Is it because she left Stamos? Like,
I haven't forgiven her for Pepper Dennis.
Oh boy. I mean,
a show I watched every episode of.
Oh, did you really?
I watched, I watched every episode of Pepper Dennis.
You were the one. Because there's like a couple people who are listening to this right now who are actively Googling Pepper Dennis.
What the
because
fuck?
They're like, I remember that show, Pepper Dennis. I never watched it. Yeah.
I think I had such residual affection for her from Femme Fatale that I was like, sure, I'll watch you on a show called Pepper Dennis. And I did.
Did she do stuff on Ugly Betty also?
I never watched Ugly Betty, but she very well may have.
I feel like I remember her. I mean, obviously, there's X-Men stuff, so that's, of course, like, the thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Wow, yeah. I never watched Pepper Dennis. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Nobody did. But, yeah, no, Chelsea was on the podcast. She actually came on, and we did a show on It Chapter 2, so it's everything's come full circle. But she talked about, you know, she kind of wanted to make a horror movie designed for, like, teenage girls to watch at sleepovers, and I think she succeeded wildly in that pursuit, because I think that's exactly what Satanic Panic is.
Excellent. By the way, I was right. She was an Ugly Betty.
Nice.
And it was the year after Pepper Dennis aired.
We're sorry, Pepper Dennis is canceled, but we've got an offer from Ugly Betty.
Oh, Ugly Betty was amazing, so don't you dare make fun of that show.
I never saw it. I didn't say one bad thing about it.
All right. I could tell your tone, though. But
I have
no tone. Oh, you have a tone. But you know what's funny? Because, like, I was trying to think of, like, what did I see her in? Because I was like, no, she wasn't in Children's Hospital. I was like, she was in some dumb Adult Swim show, and it was NTSF SDSUV.
Yes.
Which is, like, the goofiest, stupidest show ever, but I watched it because, you know. That's what I do. I watch the Adult Swims. I'm waiting for my check, or at least my bump. Like, if I just get one of the coveted bump slots on one of their shows one night. But she, like, to see somebody like her pop up on that show was kind of weird and fun. But I just looked really quick too, and there was a show called Eastwick, apparently.
Yes, I remember that. That was like a summer replacement series that didn't last very long.
Okay, yeah, because she was on that as well. So,
yeah.
Oh, there you go. You learn something new every day.
You
Pepper Dennis, everyone.
I'm excited that I was able to pull that out.
I'm gonna find a Pepper Dennis T-shirt for you.
Thank you.
I have to find it in time for your birthday.
All right, top three. What is
top three? All right. So my third is a indie movie. I'm stalling right now, so I didn't have my page prepped in time,
sorry.
I can get all my names right, because I got so caught up in the Pepper Dennis.
America got caught up in the Pepper Dennis.
Right? Okay, sorry. I'm like falling apart here. See what happens when you get me on the phone for like an hour? So my number three slot is from Issa Lopez, which is Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Oh, yes, I knew that would be on your list.
Yes. I mean, it's such a beautiful movie. It's so well made. It's so full of horror and hope and these beautiful fantasy elements that really all work in tandem together. I don't even know at this point if anything I would say would like sort of do it justice. But it does, of course, harken back to the Guillermo del Toro Devil's Backbone days and things like that, or even Pan's Labyrinth. But I think what Issa has done here is really done something that's so uniquely hers. There's a certain sense of urgency to it in terms of the real world aspects of it, mm-hmm. that I think just makes it really an important film. And I love it so much. Like, it has such a wonderful heart to it. You know, it's a nearly impossible movie to pull off with, like, it's so rooted in these kids' performances who were not really actors. You know, they were just the right kids to bring these characters to life. It's such a special movie. It's, you know, it's a unicorn. It's this little unicorn of a movie. You know,
it is. It's probably the saddest horror movie of 2019.
It is, but yet it's hopeful at the end.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's, you know, don't get me wrong. I was definitely bawling my eyes out by the end. But then there's like this little ray of hope that sort of shines in at the end. And you're like, okay, you know, but it, in the way that I would almost, there's like that little ray of hope that comes in Pan's Labyrinth.
Well, that's I mean, there's so many comparisons to Del Toro, and I think they're justified. She's not imitating Del Toro, but the feeling you get watching one of his movies, which is like, oh, it's part fairy tale, part real world horror.
It evokes similar emotions.
Yeah, for sure.
It definitely, I wouldn't say it's an Alien ripoff per se, but it's pretty close. Pretty close.
There's people in it, right? There's people in Alien.
And they're in peril.
Yeah. Hello. So. Alien ripoff much?
Right? Get some new ideas. Thank you very much. But yeah, no, if you haven't made time for Tigers Are Not Afraid, folks, like, please do. It's a truly, what I consider a very special film.
Yeah.
That I just, it's just, it's one of those you just kind of, you can feel it settling into your soul as you're watching it. And I knew, like, in the first 5 minutes, like, I was like, oh my God, I'm so in love with this movie right now. And it just, it kept, you know, ripping my heart out, tossing it back into my chest, ripping it out again. And it just, yeah, it filled me in ways that I was not, you know, I don't think many other movies did this year.
And it is currently streaming on Shudder, so everybody should watch it.
And anytime Shudder wants to pass out those checks, that's cool.
My number three was a very pleasant surprise because I saw this director's first movie, wanted to love it, didn't quite get there. It is Adam Egypt Mortimer's Daniel Isn't Real, which
we've already declared the greatest director name of the year, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yes.
With a name like that, he could really do a guest spot on Hoity Toity Horror.
Right? Anytime you want to come on, Mr. Adam Egypt Mortimer, you come right on, sir.
Daniel Isn't Real is very imaginative, very confidently made, and has a lot to say about, I thought, has a lot to say about kind of mental illness and depression and some things that, you know, I struggle with. And there was a lot of stuff that I found myself relating to in the movie. You know, where it all lands would be a different conversation, I think, in terms of what it has to say about some of those things. Reminded me of, what was the movie from a couple years ago? Lights Out, I think.
Yes.
But that would require spoilers and stuff like that, so I don't want to get into all that. But I thought it was a really well-made and really beautiful movie. Really solid performances from Patrick Schwarzenegger and Miles Robbins. Robbins, thank you.
Dave, what up, Dave? Send Dave.
who was also, in addition to being in Halloween, he was in Blockers, and he's very, very funny in Blockers.
I always keep forgetting he was in Blockers. Like, yeah. It was cute, because, like, I realized that the girl who is on that show on TBS, Miracle Workers,
sure,
was also in Blockers.
Okay.
And I was like, holy shit, like, how did I not realize that? Because she was at the awards last week, and I was like, and Brian was like, wait. He's like, that's the girl from Miracle Workers. I'm like, yeah, and I think that's the, she's also from Blockers. So it's fun when you can put all these little things together.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I thought Daniel Isn't Real was, like, just really such a well-done movie. I was really, it got me more excited than a lot of horror movies this year, just in terms of the filmmaking on display and the, it's, you know, it's kind of a magic trick what he pulls off, because it shouldn't work as well as it does. And I was very surprised, because it could have been, you know, the horror equivalent of Drop Dead Fred, and it's not, it's something else. And I thought it was pretty remarkable.
Okay, well, first of all, I really now want the horror version of Drop Dead Fred.
it's kind of this, but...
Yeah, but, like, to the nth degree. But, yeah, I didn't put it on my list because I had a feeling you were going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, well, I feel like he's probably going to cover this one. And here you are.
Here I am, covering it.
Here you are, doing the Dark Lord's work.
That's right. All right, top two. Here goes.
Whew, already. Wow. It goes so fast. Yeah, so my number two, again, when you talk about surprising films, I feel like using the word surprising over and over again is just so cliche. Oh, that was such a surprise. Ugh, whatever. But yes, I literally, when this movie was announced, I was like, well, I'm just going to see it because of the premise. And that basically was crocodiles in the middle of a hurricane in Florida. And how the hell do you survive that? And I was, or alligators, sorry.
Alien ripoff.
Yeah. Other than it being an alien ripoff, Mr. Aja, Crawl sort of went and did a little swam its way right into my heart because it ended up being so much better than it should have been. Like, this could have been like sort of the offspring of like a Sharknado, because you're like, right. Oh, hurricanes, gators, here you go. All right, we know what's coming. And then it's not that movie whatsoever. Like, it gives you real characters to invest in, real stakes, like real moments of like dread and tension where you like, you spend half the movie in this little basement and you're like in this crawl space, if you will. Oh, it's like the title works on two levels. And you spend half the time like looking in these dark little corners, like, did that move? Did that move? Wait, did that move? Is that an eye? Like, where you're so engaged in that moment, alongside Kaya Scodelario, Scodelario? I don't know.
Scodelario?
It's Scodelario.
Maybe. Scodelario?
Scodelario?
This is the rest of the podcast, everyone.
We're just going to spend 45 minutes trying to say this girl's name.
With an upward inflection, because we're not sure.
I'm going to make a Family Guy joke. My iPod is chocolate. Sorry.
I don't get it.
Like two people out there are going to understand that joke. Anyways, it's a character named Jillian who was dating Brian, and it's played by Drew Barrymore, and she's a ditz, and she thinks her box of Junior Mints is an iPod, and he's like, something about like your Junior Mints. She's like, my iPod is chocolate. So, and she always ends everything with a question at the end of her voice, at the end of a sentence. So that's what it reminded me of. Anyway, so Kaya Scodelario, and Barry Pepper, who I like, let's Pepper. Give it up for Barry Pepper. Pepper?
Pepper?
Pepper? Pepperaw. But let's give it up for the return of Barry Pepper, folks.
Yeah.
They're so good in this movie, and you really become sort of invested in this sort of chasm between them, you know, that's based in, like, you know, the fact that their family has sort of broken apart, and they're sort of thrown in the midst of this impossible situation, and they've got to figure out a way to survive it, you know, and also, you know, sort of make peace with the things that have happened. And it's just, it's so damn good. And, like, it gives you a dog character that you actually give a, like, this dog is so much, like, I think it's Sugar. I think it's Sugar the dog is the name of the dog. And Sugar is, like this thing, like, where people in my theater were, like, hooting and hollering, like, for this dog. And I don't remember, like, I think the last time I remember that happening was during Independence Day.
Yeah.
Where people were like, oh my God, the dog survived, you know, from the crazy fiery, you know, underpass. Like, so I just, it's so much fun. It was really great to see Aja sort of get back into horror again. Because he kind of had done some genre adjacent stuff for a few years. And just really, you know, again, from somebody who did Piranha 3D, I don't know why I was doubting that he would do a great job. Not that I think I was, but I just wasn't expecting the movie to be as satisfying as it was. And it really is. It's a movie you can show anybody. They're going to have a great time with it. And, you know, it serves as a really great reminder of, like, I just don't ever need to go to Florida again. Sorry,
no,
Florida.
No. Yeah, satisfying is a really good word for it. You know, it takes a very basic premise, but it executes it as well as possible. And I think it's so important that they spend 15 minutes at the start of the film establishing the characters and their relationship and sort of what is at stake before they introduce the alligators, because so many other movies would be like, no, get to the alligators. And we wouldn't necessarily care about the people in the house, but I think it makes all the difference. I will admit, I struggle a little bit with the CG alligators, but I still really like the movie.
Yeah, I mean, they're not all CG, though. So I think the ones that are practical, I think, work well enough.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's ones that are just, you know, they are what they are.
Right. Doesn't ruin the movie for me, but.
Yeah. But I think there's I think, like, four of them in there that are actually practical. And I think that kind of makes up for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. My number two is a movie that you don't even really like very much, and that is Midsommar.
It's not that I don't like it, because I do like it. I didn't fall over my own dick over it, if that makes
any
sense.
Well, I don't know if I did either.
Because, like, I don't know, like, I walked out of the screening, and I could definitely appreciate the artistry that went into making that movie. There's so many goddamn details. Again, you're talking about a movie where you run a revel in the details. Like, you just go to any scene when they're inside that big room where everyone sleeps and pause it and just study the walls.
Right.
Because everything is right there. It's all right in front of you. But again, when you're watching the movie for the first time, it just, you know, zips right by. And you know there's a layer to storytelling to that. But you can't quite immerse yourself in that yet because you're still trying to get comfortable with everything else. Not that you can really get comfortable in Midsommar because there's nothing comfortable about it. I think it's an incredibly well-made movie with fantastic performances that, for me, just doesn't say the things that I think it says.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think Ari Aster is wildly talented. I will absolutely be there to see anything and everything he ever makes. But I think in terms of the films, I think he gets more right in Hereditary. But again, I haven't seen the director's cut of Midsommar, which I feel like that might fix some of the issues that I have with the movie, because that's what I've sort of heard from folks when they've sort of discussed little parts of what is different. Because I just feel like some things just sort of get thrown away in that movie, which bugs me because, like, there's so many gorgeous and amazing details that just, they should still be there and they're just not.
I haven't yet seen the director's cut either. Adam Riske has seen the director's cut, and he said it's actually a much worse movie.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. I think it's an incredibly dense, incredibly original, incredibly kind of offbeat horror movie. I love that it's pretty much all set in the daylight. I like that the setting is creepy. And I know a lot of people have complained, like, there's no surprises. It tells you where it's going right from the outset, and then it just goes there. And there's some truth to that. Like you said, it kind of lays out the entire plot, you know, in the production design. But I think that inevitability can be just as scary as surprise. And so I don't mind a movie that goes the way you think it's going to go. Although I would kind of disagree, because I found myself almost cackling at the dark comedy of a specific image late in the film, because how could anybody have predicted the bear, you know? Like, even if we predicted where it was going, I don't know that I could have guessed how it would get there. And where we end up is so insane that I thought it was very darkly funny.
Yeah. Like, you say original, and I say alien ripoff. I almost think you just spit take. Yeah. I mean, how many people are going to roll up in your mentions and be like, well, this is just like The Wicker Man? I mean, you know, okay.
Sure,
There's definitely cinematic DNA shared between the two, but I don't think it's The Wicker Man. I just think weird shit happens in folk horror, and people just need to accept that. I think for me, my big issues were just the fact that, like, everybody wants to sort of laud it as this movie where, you know, Dani, she comes in her own and she finds her own power. And I'm like, no, at the end of the movie, like, she thinks she, like, nobody, I think it perfectly sums up anybody who's, like, in life where, like, you think you have power over things, but ultimately you're still being manipulated by something. And that none of us are really in control. And, you know, and I think for me, it sort of sets this false narrative in a way that really, it wasn't something that I saw, like, that I sort of recognized right after I saw it. I think it's just the more that I, like, had it rolling around in my head a bunch, mm-hmm. where I've just been like, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, look at her. She's getting what she wants, you know, she's getting this affirmation that she so desperately needs in this family. But yet, ultimately, like, family, for her, in any situation, has just always been manipulative of her and her emotions. you know, whether it's sort of what happens in the beginning with her actual family, the thing that she's dealing with Christian and sort of by extension his friends, and then ultimately the Harga. And for me, you know, maybe it's just because I've seen so many people laud it as this one thing where I'm like, I feel like it's the completely opposite. And I don't think that makes it any less of a film, but it has made me emotionally distant from it because of it. If that makes sense.
I would make a case that it's both. I would make a case that she's being manipulated, but that at the same time, she's still finding acceptance and empathy where she hadn't before. And I don't think those two things need to be mutually exclusive. But we don't need to debate Midsommar right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I get it, but yeah. yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I tend to focus on the shittiness of people.
Sure.
But like, I mean, ultimately she never would have been there, you know. I don't know. Anyway, that's like a whole nother conversation, so. But no, I mean, I for anybody who would put it on their favorites list or their top 10 list of the year, I would never discount anybody doing it because I do think it's incredibly well made. I wish it had stuck with me the way Hereditary had stuck with me.
Sure.
You know, I really do. And I will contend that Florence, you know, Pugh did an amazing job in that movie and deserves every accolade thrown at her for it. I mean, the sounds that she makes, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
Whenever, like, it's unholy, the sound that comes out of her. And for better or for worse, I think we all can relate to that on some level. Maybe not the same level as her character. But, like, it just, you know, it's really great performances. I wish I wasn't dead inside, I guess, is ultimately what I'm just trying to say.
I wish it, too.
You know, what can you do? It is what it is.
It is.
So, but again, it's one of those like where I'm wanting to see the more complete version because I'm wondering if that will help it sort of settle a little bit better for me.
Sure.
So
understandable.
So yeah.
All right, we are at your number one.
We are at the number one. Oh boy. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's any surprise. I don't know. It might be your number one. Who knows? It hasn't popped up on your list yet. So maybe we're in synchronicity in this. Maybe our lists are tethered in a way.
Oh, nice.
Oh. But my number one is Us.
Very nice.
And I will say this, like, I really liked Us when I saw it in March. But I still was like, but I was still very much more in the, you know, the camp Get Out. You know, like, I was like, oh, you know, for me, Get Out really just hit every beat. And then I rewatched Us. And then I realized all of these little things. I was like, oh, shit, this is, like, brilliant. And then I rewatched it again. And it just, like, for me, the best kind of movies that exist are the ones where every time you watch it, you rediscover something about that film. And I think Us is one of those movies. And, yes, it's big and ambitious and messy. And, yes, it feels sort of just at odds with itself at some points. But I love that for his, you know, for his follow-up that Jordan Peele basically just swings for the fences in the biggest possible way and like doesn't adhere to a structure because it would have been so easy after something like Get Out to just, you know, go and do these movies. And it's still a movie that's very much taking on social issues, but in a very different way. And in a much bigger way than Get Out did. And I just think it's magnificent. Like, I think, you know, again, I had made peace months ago, even though I wanted it and was hopeful that maybe sort of the critics' wave of recognizing Lupita would sort of maybe like make Oscar people realize like, oh, maybe we should actually pay attention to this movie. Silly me. Because I think, you know, she gives two brilliant performances in that movie. But I also think that the rest of the cast in that film, too, are incredible. And as much as, like, Lupita deserves everything great that's said about her about that movie, I don't think the rest of the cast nearly gets as much love. And they should. Because I think especially Shahadi Wright-Joseph, like, she's so good in that movie. Holy shit. And the little kid, I actually had to sit with him at the awards last week, and I was like, and we sat down, and Brian leans over, he's like, oh my god, it's the kid from Us. Oh, I'm freaking me out. And I was like, it was fine. And he was adorable and ate little desserts. But again, when you talk about movies that made me okay with people I'm normally not okay with, like, I, as much as I love Adult Swim, I hate the Tim and Eric Awesome Show. I hate it with every fiber of my being. And this movie made me like Tim Heidecker because it tapped in to his assholeness in such a perfect way. And him and Elizabeth Moss in that movie are so great.
They are great.
Are so great. And I think that their tethered versions are like so freaking creepy in just such a really heightened different way than, you know, we see from, oh God, I'm totally blanking on the Wilsons, what the family, the other family's last name was. So I just, I really, there's such an interesting sort of planned duality in that movie. Some really fantastic set pieces. I think the speech, I think the two speeches that Lupita gives in that movie that just, I mean, dear God, that it just, it's so fantastic. So that was my number one for the year. And again, I came out of South by, like, I really liked that a lot. You know, I was like, oh, but I still love Get Out more. And then I went and revisited it. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, this movie is freaking brilliant. And I just, you know, I'm so excited for anything and everything Jordan Peele does.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited. Have you seen the promo for The Hunters?
I have, yeah.
Oh my God. Like, that is so, like, so much like my shit. Like,
it seems pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So good for him.
Yeah, for sure. It is not on my list. It would be,
what?
Yeah, it would be in my honorable mentions, but that has a lot to do with, I've only seen it once. I saw it opening weekend. I liked it, didn't love it, knew that I had to revisit it, haven't done so. It could be a completely different movie if I watch it again.
Sorry, I was coughing.
That's okay.
That is so interesting to me. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about what your number one is now.
Well, really, you would already know it's Dr. Sleep.
Oh, duh. I
because
that
I said it would
Sleep.
Come, yeah. Yeah, Dr. Sleep is my favorite horror movie of the year for all the reasons that we already talked about. It's the one that I feel like is going to have the longest life with me, like the one I'm going to keep coming back to again and again. I really like that it's like a lot of Mike Flanagan movies. It's very much about how we process and deal with trauma, particularly as a child. I just think it's such a special movie that unfortunately, you know, kind of tanked at the box office. It didn't do those escape room numbers. And I think it's going to be a movie that
like
lives on.
World.
It's going to live on for a long, long time. You know, box office is not a reflection of the life of a horror movie, as we know from John Carpenter's The Thing. So I do think it's going to have a long, long life and I'm excited for that. I just think it was one of my absolute favorite movies of the year, horror or otherwise.
On a scale of 1 to Alien versus Predator, how much of an Alien ripoff was it?
Well, I'm trying to remember because the people in the movie, they were wearing clothes and people in
yes.
Alien. Yeah. Clothes. Guess what? Clothes.
Yep. Definitely people in peril.
Basically watching a remake.
It's amazing. Like, not only was he able to recreate The Shining, but also Alien. Is there nothing Mike Flanagan can't do?
What are some of your honorable mentions?
Oh, Jesus. You didn't give me, you didn't tell me we were going to have extra homework.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You don't. Oh, yeah.
Have to list any. I don't have any. I thought you did because you keep saying it would be one of my honorable mentions. So I was like, oh, she has those. I don't have any.
Yeah. Obviously, I would go with Girl on the Third Floor.
Me too.
Yes, I would definitely go with Ma.
Not me.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just going to chime in, yes or no.
Okay. I would also go Annabelle Comes Home.
Didn't see it. Have never seen an Annabelle movie.
Oh, man. You're really missing out with the last two. I'm just saying.
I know. I totally need to see them.
Yeah, I would also I would go with Horror Noir.
Sure. Yeah, me too.
I went straight with like featurey features here.
Okay.
I would also go with Bliss.
Sure. Maybe. I don't know about that. I can't decide how I feel about Bliss. There's a lot of stuff I like in Bliss.
Yeah, I kind of go back and forth with it, but I will say this, like, you know, I know a movie has made an impression on me when I think about it a lot, and I think about that movie a lot. Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I would also, because I like creepy kids, I would probably put The Prodigy on that list.
Really? Wow. I did not see The Prodigy.
Well, okay, don't be that guy. You're like, oh, really? Wow.
I saw the trailer for The Prodigy, and that's why I didn't see The Prodigy.
Uh-huh.
It just looked like an Alien ripoff.
It, I mean, yeah, every movie on my list is. I would probably also put I Trapped the Devil on there as well.
That was good, yeah.
Yeah, I, you know, anytime I could see, oh, I always screw up Scott Pothiris' name, so I'm just going to say it like that and just screw it up anyway. Right. And AJ, of course.
Right.
But yeah, I really like that movie too. So it's something you all could enjoy next year for Christmas. So that's pretty good. I had Satanic Panic on there.
Okay.
I also had the, this is tied to Alien. It's the memory, documentary.
Oh, okay.
About the origins of Alien. Yeah. So that does fit. So yeah, that's kind of, where mine would be. I had The Perfection on my honorable mentions as well.
Okay.
So yeah, I know it was tough. 'Cause like when we do our favorites list on Daily Dead, it's like, it's the Wild West. We just put whatever we want.
Right.
And of course I'm the one who's like, oh, here's 20 things to put on my list.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, you know, everybody else has like a couple and, you know, and I'm like, oh, I had to actually scale it down. 'Cause I had 25 originally and I got to the point where I was like, I was trying to wrap up my list. I was like, I just gotta be done. So sorry to a few films out there. I ran out of time. So, yeah.
Should we count down our list from 10 to 1 once more?
Oh, like Casey Kasem?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you want me to do mine first?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Coming in at number 10, you got Isabelle Huppert and Greta. Number 9, Thrills, Chills, and More. We've got Escape Room from Adam Robitaille. I can't keep doing these because I'm not going to be that clever. Number 8, you're like, no, that's good. The stick is done. Just move on. All right. Number 8 would be the Child's Play remake. Number 7 is Little Monsters. Number 6 is Dr. Sleep. Number 5 is Happy Death Day to You. Number 4 is Ready or Not. I always want to say Here I Come after I hear that because all of a sudden I get Fugees in my head.
Sure.
Number 3 is Tigers Are Not Afraid. Number 2 is Crawl. And coming in at number 1 is Jordan Peele's Us.
Very nice. My number 10 is Arctic. My number 9, Ready or Not. Number 8, The Perfection. Number 7, The Furies. Number 6, It Chapter 2. Number 5, Close Calls. Number 4, Satanic Panic. Number 3, Daniel Isn't Real. Number 2, Midsummer. And number 1, Dr. Sleep. Only two movies appeared on both of our lists.
Interesting. Both Alien ripoffs.
Well, listen, we're suckers for Alien.
What can we say?
Well, thank you, Heather. This is always fun. Where can people find more of your writing?
I mean, if they want to.
Oh, they do.
You can find me over at dailydead.com. You can always find me on Twitter at TheHorrorChick. And every once in a while, I pop over at Fangoria.com as well.
Yeah, you do. That's why you're praising all their movies.
That's right. Collecting them big bucks. I've almost got enough for that yacht.
Almost. Almost.
And by yacht, I mean electricity bill. So, yes.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. This is always a really fun show to do. Thank you again, Heather, for reliving the past year in horror with me.
Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to being back in 52 weeks when you deem me cool enough to be on FS Movie again.
I look forward to that, too.
Yes. And we can talk about more Alien ripoffs.
Yay. There will be a bunch more by then. Thanks, everybody.